But I would say if you're going to dream big, you got to work big. But don't stop dreaming.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Glenn Varello, the head coach at Paul VI High School and one of the most respected high school coaches in the country. Coach Varello spent 7 seasons as an assistant at Eleanor Roosevelt High School before becoming a head coach and later leading the program at Paul VI. He's been named Coach of the Year 17 times, ranked in the national top 25 for 18 seasons, and has helped develop over 90 college players as well as 5 NBA players. In this episode, we discuss how to help quieter players communicate better on the floor, creative ways to establish a culture as a first-year head coach, and how he vets players to ensure they're the right fit for his program. Please note this episode was cut into 2 parts. So please welcome to the podcast, Glenn Varello. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. Welcome back, coaches. Thanks, everyone, as always, for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your favorite voices to hear on a day-to-day basis, Doug Caputo, Alan Major. We are fortunate today that we get to sit down with a high school coach, head coach over at Paul VI High School, Washington, D.C. Ladies and gentlemen, Coach Glenn Varello. Coach Varello, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, guys. Looking forward to spending some time with you.
Absolutely, man. We appreciate it.
So to give everybody kind of a quick synopsis, you have won a stellar career so far as a head coach just at Paul VI High School. But nonetheless, you've been at, I know, another high school as well, Eleanor Roosevelt. You've had great success there. Your tenure, your story, everything is, it's amazing. It's great. There's a lot of information. And before we even have you start speaking on anything, I could tell everybody you're going to learn a lot from this. First off, this is going to bring you back to the roots, going back to when you were an assistant, right? You were starting out Eleanor Roosevelt High School, if I'm not mistaken, and then ultimately became a head coach after about 7 seasons. Talk about just one, that assistant time, those 7 years before you became that head coach, being patient, growing in the program to later ultimately be that head coach and what you learned from those times as an assistant.
Yeah, and it's really cool because I've been a head coach for a long time now. I'll never forget, though, the start of it all, the foundation. One of the things I really liked was the head coach at the time, Mark Hurt, would always ask my input, right? After games, after practices, what'd you see? And he wouldn't kind of lead me down a path. He would just say, what did you see? What do you want to share? And as a young assistant coach, you want to be able to contribute. And so I would offer up whatever I was seeing and whatever I was noticing. And then he'd come back and, oh, this is why I did this, or this is what I saw, or this is why that wouldn't have worked, or, hey, that's not a bad idea. So we'd have that kind of dialogue. And I learned so much just on, because you have an idea as an assistant coach, hey, I have some ideas. I have some things that I think would maybe work. And so just have that dialogue, the back and forth, in a very safe environment, if you will, as far as being able to sit there and talk it through. And then he would explain why he did the things he did and why he handled it. And philosophically, obviously, we all have our own ideas of how it all works. But for me, it was so great to hear someone else give that kind of input and then give me that kind of feedback when I was offered the opportunity to speak and have a voice. And then he always encouraged me to have a voice with the players, which I really appreciated. So I think my time as an assistant coach was balanced out too with, I got a chance to be a head coach during the summer league. And out here in the DC area, the DMV, our summer league are really, really tough. And it was a lot of fun for me to kind of cut my teeth that way. With him on the sideline watching as a head coach, he allowed me just to run the whole summer program. And then I got the chance to learn and learn a lot, make a lot of mistakes and learn from, because it's always hard, right? Like it's easy as an assistant coach. Like, hey, maybe we should play so-and-so. Maybe we need to put so-and-so in and maybe give him more time. And he'd always look at me going, you do realize we have to take somebody out then, right? Else is getting diminished minutes. And so, oh yeah, that's a good point. I thought it was a great learning experience for me. I got a chance to grow up in that program. And then when he moved back to Indiana, that's where he was originally from, I had an opportunity to get the head coaching job. And that was just having the same players, already knowing them and moving from that one seat over was a big adjustment, but I think I was ready for it because of the relationships. I had a chance to connect with the players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. You know, a lot of people that listen to this pod, Glenn, like eventually it could be young coaches, assistants that eventually want to be head coaches. And you hit on three things that are great for either someone that eventually wants to be a head coach or someone that currently is one. The first thing you said was safe, meaning that your head coach gave you a voice. And because sometimes we've all been in staff meetings throughout our career, and sometimes we've been in a staff meeting where you don't feel like you could maybe speak freely, or you feel like if you do speak freely, there might be a hand grenade tossed back at you. So you saying safe is a big deal, because that safe is an empowering thing when you're letting your head coach, assistant coaches contribute. The second thing I love that you said was having a voice, like your head coach helped you develop your own coaching voice. And players know when it's your voice versus someone else's. If you're playing copycat or you're trying to be Jim Boeheim, but you're Glenn Ferrello, right? Like, players are smart and they don't get nearly enough credit for being brilliant. So that's the second thing I love that you said. Yeah. And then the third thing is you got reps. Like, your head coach gave you reps with the summer league. And you got it, like you said, the chance to cut your teeth. You could, it's like the Sundance movie deal that Paul or, you know, Robert Redford created. He wanted young actors to go someplace where they could fail.
Yeah.
And not get it blown up on social media and on the news. And you had safe place to speak. You were able to grow your voice. And then the summer league gave you reps where you could obviously fail and have some success. And so as a result, wow, what a great opportunity in those 7 years.
Yeah. And I'd say too, I think there's a, what I say to assistant coaches is don't be in such a hurry. And you don't have, I grew up the son of a coach, and my father used to always tell me, Frank Ferrello, he was tremendous at football and basketball. And he'd always say, as an assistant coach, just be very careful that you don't have all the answers. And one thing that we all understand as head coaches, we don't have all the answers either. So sometimes we have to be a little bit careful as an assistant coach that you think you have all the answers, that things are just so obvious, and it's not. And I think that's one thing that, that was instilled in me as a young coach with my father, but also that I held on to myself, is the respect for how hard it is to be a head coach. And as an assistant coach, I am there to offer some suggestions and recommendations, but ultimately the head coach has that final decision, and whatever that happens to be, I'm going in with it. We're going to make the best of it. And if we don't, and if it doesn't work, I always say to my assistant coaches now, I will listen. I love the feedback. I want their input. I want them to have ownership. And if we try something that doesn't work, I'm not going to get mad at them for it. It's like, okay, we'll just try something else. Like, it's important for them to have that involvement. We've done something for a long time that during practice, definitely at the end of a practice when we circle up, and I just talk to my coaches and say, give me a teaching point. And every coach gets an opportunity to have a voice for a teaching point. It might be during the middle. Maybe we're doing a segment on, again, zone offense, zone defense, but we'll get together. And I want teaching points from everybody, because they're going to see something that maybe I didn't see. It gives them a chance to articulate. It gets the coaches, like you said, the players are brilliant. Players really do know who knows what. And you want the coaches to be able to stand on their own, to be able to say, hey, I have input. Listen to me. Coach Ferrello values my opinion, so I need to buy into as a player. And so we do this teaching point thing that has really worked for us as a program, to have all the coaches have that opportunity to speak, and they get better at it, right? You have some young coaches that might do the copycat thing, and they're like, oh yeah, so-and-so said, I don't want to hear what, oh yeah, I'm gonna
yeah, what do you think?
I want you to get in, get out, learn how to do that. And then we actually had the players do, we started having the players speak as well. So anyway, that's one piece that, as you mentioned, that coach, as far as having that voice, has been something that's really important to me and how we've been able to develop our voices collectively as a coaching unit.
Yeah, I love that, man. I love it. Yeah.
Letting your assistant speak is great. Like, giving them an opportunity. And I like how you said also you let the players speak, because that's one thing, depending on the kid and the personality, sometimes it's tough to be able to get kids to speak, whether they're on the floor or off the floor. It's a dime a dozen when you find that one kid who really orchestrates everything, tells everybody what to do. That's a gift to your team. And sometimes people are grateful to be able to have a couple of those, but sometimes you get those quiet kids who don't communicate, and you really got to find ways to pull it out of them, like for them to communicate. So have you ever ran into that and found ways to get those kids to communicate more?
Yeah, I think we see that across the board all the time now, right? Like back, we do the whole when we were growing up thing, right? We all played by ourselves in the park, whatever it is. And we'd all have to have a voice. We'd have to officiate the games. We'd have to talk to each other as teammates. If we lose, we're sitting for four games or whatever happens. We all hear the stories. We all tell the stories. One of the things about that is now kids are at the age of six, they're in a pretty little uniform. Mom and dad are watching every single game. There's a coach to tell them what to do. There's four assistant coaches on the bench telling them what to do. And then they have officials. So they have no need to ever develop a voice, right? Because everyone's talking at them all the time. So how do we get that to happen? And so we all complain about it. And it's one of the things I can't stand is from a coaching community standpoint is when we complain about what's going on, instead of having solutions for them, this is what's going on. Let's just work out. And so when we say coaches, our kids don't know how to lead or they don't have a voice or we don't have that leadership on the floor and you got to communicate, we had to find a way to make them do that, right? How do we foster that environment for them to do that? So for example, we'll do time and score. And when we do time and score, I have the players coach themselves. A lot of times you can have two assistant coaches and coach them. And what I found was they'll do whatever you tell them to do, but they have no idea why the hell they're doing it, right? And so if you make them coach themselves, then they will make some mistakes, right? They'll be like, why'd you run this? Or there's a minute on the clock and you're sitting back in the zone. Or why are you shooting in the first 10 seconds of the shot clock? You go through all that, but you give them the opportunity to make their own mistakes. And then you walk them through, hey, you guys made these decisions. Why? And here's why maybe we shouldn't have done that. And then they get better at it, right? And then now all of a sudden you're in the game. There's a minute left to get in the game. And they already know what you're going to say. They already know why we're going to run the play we're going to run or run the scheme or whatever happens to be. So I think that's one thing that we've tried to do. We do have a lot of meetings. I do talk these guys to death, but I make them contribute and I make them actually offer up. And so not just the captains either. That's the other thing too. The captains. That just tells all the kids that are non-captains that I don't have to talk. Hey, thanks, coach. You know, I don't have to talk at all. This is great. You know, it's up to the captains. So we get everyone involved. Even as I remember Jordan Smith Jr. is one of the best players in the country. He's had a great career for us as a senior now. When he was a freshman, we started having him learn how to speak in front of everybody and get comfortable doing it. As I mentioned earlier, that safe space, coach, right? That circle is safe. So we had a player a few years ago, Patrick Gongba, who's now starts at Duke. And Patrick was very uncomfortable talking in front of his teammates. And yet we just had him keep doing it. And they were all friends, right? So they would giggle at him. Ben Hammond, who's the starting point guard of Virginia Tech, great friend of him, knew him since he was growing up. They'd make fun of each other a little bit. But in that space, they also learn how to do it. So they were very comfortable talking. Darren Harris is also at Duke now. And Darren doesn't talk. He's not much of a talker. He's just a quiet kid. And then by the time he was a senior, he could run my practices. He could run like the whole pregame. Like he would speak to the guys before the game. And I'd always have the guys like, hey, you get an opportunity to speak right now in front of everyone. What do you want everyone to hear? And then the messaging is amazing. It's amazing how smart these kids are.
Yes.
Maybe you can pick up on. And then their shares with each other are more important than a chair from me. Okay. And I think you got to keep doing it. You got to give them that opportunity. You got to walk them through it. And then there's that community of just trust within each other that what we're trying to do is the betterment of all of us. And then we're going to get more comfortable doing this. And I think it's been something that's really worked for us, but it has to be intentional and it has to be every day. You know, it can't just be organic. And I think that's something that has to matter to you enough for the kids to be in those environments, because the kids will, I see this all the time. I'm a leader by example. That's just being lazy. That's just being like a cop out. That means I don't want to speak. And that's one thing I want to get the guys away from is, no, you have to have ownership and have a speaking voice.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. I love that. You know, it's funny, from ages 6 to 14, by the time you get them, not only are they being told by a lot of people what to do, how to do it with the youth league. And again, we went and found a park or found a gym and the community center, and you chose teams and everybody knew why you chose that dude and why you didn't chose that dude, just all that. But they're in by age 6 to 14, their lives are also dominated by some type of screen. And so because it's an iPad when they're young, right? And they're watching Blue's Clues or whatever the heck is going on in terms of when they're a kid, then it's eventually YouTube stuff. And then they get a phone, right? So their lives are dominated by screens from ages 6 to 14. So there's a reason why they struggle to have a conversation one-on-one with someone by the time they get to you. So what you're actually breaking down and rebuilding a skill that you would hope that they would have coming, but a lot of times even at kitchen tables, families aren't really speaking that much unless the phone is prohibited at the table. So what you're doing is so valuable, because everything they do the rest of their life, they're going to have to deal with people.
That is, that's right there. We want them to learn how to be fighters, right? We always talk about learning how to be a fighter in this world, but learn how to communicate and learn how to be able to just be comfortable communicating with adults, right? Because soon that's all you'll be doing in your life is communicating with adults. So right. If you can do it at 14, wow, you're just ahead of things. And in the social media aspect, right? And in phones, we, of course, on our road trips, you got to have the phones away when we're sitting having meals or we're together. And if you get caught with it, you have to, first offense is you got to pay for your own meal, right? Because we take care of the meals. You got to pay for everyone's meal, right?
Nice.
They don't want to mess with that. But we also, shift too. We got to take advantage of social media and being on their phones or being. So now, hey, you want to be involved in TikTok? Then I'm going to send you a ton of TikTok clips of coaches talking and X's and O's and some breakdown stuff. Hey, you guys are reading all this. You're seeing all this too. I'm going to send it to you. Let's celebrate what good things we can use with the information that we can have. And let's get on those phones for a good reason, right? And get a chance to watch a lot of clips. And so we pepper them with all that stuff too.
Yeah. No, we do the same thing with we send our guys personnel. We'll eventually watch it as a team, but we give them a couple of days out, just send them a short version just so they can get a taste.
And at our level, coach, what I do is we'll even ball screen coverages, right? It's something that the kids need to learn. So we'll just send out clips on ball screen coverages. Mm-hmm. The other day we sent out Iowa does a great job with their zone offense. Like their efficiency is sky high. So we found some clips and we sent those out. A lot of college clips because all our kids want to play in college. Let's send them college clips. Let's get them. But just some of the actions and some of the concepts that we want them to learn now to see how normalized this is. So when you get there, you're not so far behind. And you know this. Some guys just aren't ready for the next level because they don't even know the terminology. They don't even understand. They don't understand how to tag in a ball screen. Like, how do we help our guys understand all of this so that when you get there, when you get to your level, like they're further along as far as understanding the concepts. Hopefully you help them get on the floor a little bit sooner.
No, I love it, man. That's player development to a T right there. I love it.
And that explains why, to give everybody a reference, I know you mentioned a couple guys you've had it in college right now over at Duke and so on. You mentioned about 3 or 4 guys, but just for everybody's reference, you've had about, what, over 90 guys play in college, 5 play in the NBA. So it's like just the amount that you have touched only says a small portion. There are a lot more that you have had in your career, which, again, goes back to show all the success that you guys have had. I guess to give a little more, I always like to do the bragging for everybody because I know a lot of times they don't like to brag too much, but you were named Coach of the Year 17 times, ranked in the top 25 in the country for 18 seasons. So it's like everything that you're saying isn't just something that you do for the heck of it. It's obviously proven the success has been shown. So it's great to be able to hear a lot of this because just the little things, that's what I take away from it. Like even just the little things, the meals, the not having your cell phone during that. Like that's something that I feel like a lot of people think of, oh, that doesn't have anything to do with basketball. It has a lot to do with it. Yeah. So I'm glad that you covered a lot of that.
Yeah, I think that those connections, like those little things do matter. Like the meetings that we have, we might do something as simple as at the beginning of a meeting, just say, who'd you make smile today? And everyone has to share. And it's cheesy. I'm cheesy as all get out. and all the things. But to the credit of our guys, they don't eye roll it. They buy into it. You're seeing these guys. They don't act too cool. And they're happy to talk about how they made some kid smile in their class today. And they're all like sharing those stories. And yeah, positively. They're trying to just put positive energy out in the world. And that's like when you play as a team, right? You're going to face a lot of different things as a basketball unit. So if you can have more positivity just around you at all times, like you can absorb the hits you take.
No doubt. Yeah, what I love about that too, man, is like you're already laying out the 4 most important words they could ever learn. It's not about you. Those are the 4 most important words they can ever learn. So figuring out how to make somebody else smile. Yeah. It might be a little kid that has dreams of being a ball player.
Yeah.
And or an autograph or whatever it is. You give them, some guys give away their shoes after a game or whatever it is. Like you don't ever know the tidal wave that you could start of positivity in somebody's life by just doing one little simple thing. It may not be a big deal to you. It may mean the world to the person on the other side of that. But what you're saying to them is, fellas, it's not about you. Like you're going to be a part of a team the rest of your life. This is your team now, but your family's a team. Your church group is a team. Your neighborhood's a team. you're going to be a father or a husband, you know, like your that family's going to be a team. Then your own community, the neighborhood's a team. Like, you're going to be part of stuff, your job. It's this team. Like, you can't escape it. So learning that it's not about you now, that's gonna just serve you so powerfully the rest of your life. And that, to me, as you're talking, if people are listening, like, there's a cheat code here of why you guys have been successful. And it's like the book by Daniel Coyle, Talent Is Never Enough. Like, people think, oh, Paul Six, yeah, those guys are always loaded. Of course they're going to be good. Let's wait a minute. Yeah, talent is great, but it's never enough. And so you're developing your talent and you're coaching your talent, not just on the floor, but off the floor, because this life lesson stuff we're talking about right now, we haven't discussed one slice stagger action since we've been on the spot.
That's right. If you don't have all the other stuff, if you don't have all that lined up, if you don't have the mentality for them to buy into each other, then you're right. All the X's and O's, just fine. You can maybe scrape together a win here or there on a Tuesday night in January. But if you're trying to go for the bigger picture, the way we describe it always, like, you're part of something bigger than yourself. And then how do you get a 14 to 18 year old to understand that? We all understand it as adults, that it's a special thing to be part of something bigger than yourself. And we all search for it the rest of our lives after we're done with playing sports. And so how do we find that? How do we find each other? How do we find people? And so at their age, how do you make them understand what they have is so invaluable? Please don't waste the opportunity now to learn and how to do that and be part of that. And it's a lot of fun. And the other thing that you said too, Coach, as far as not being about themselves, Doug McDaniel, he's the starting point guard in Memphis now. And Doug was a great player for us. And I remember we come off a big win. We had just upset the number one team in the country, IMG, at a showcase event. And it's 11 o'clock at night. We're all trying to get going. And he jumps onto an elevator. And I was standing with a college coach and we saw him. He didn't see us. He was in a kind of a distance. And his little kids were there to get some autographs for him. So he stops the elevator, gets back off, signs it, spends as much time as possible like with the kids. And then I didn't even say anything to him that night. The next day I mentioned it, said that's something that we noticed. I was with a college coach and he noticed, he was so impressed. I was like, why'd you do that, Doug? You could have just gone home. And he's like, oh, man, I was that kid. And I was that kid. And so it's my job now to give back. And that kind of mentality is so ingrained in our players, and it's passed down from players, from the older guys. Yes. The younger guys saw how the older guys acted, and now it's their turn to be that. And it's a lot of fun. So it is a big part. Yes, we have talent for sure, but that talent knows how to play with other great talent. And I think that's the thing that we can do, is like, they understand it's not about them. It's not the Jordan Smith show. And then Jordan missed a game, a couple games about a week ago, and we got a chance to play in the Bass Pro Tournament Champions. And we actually, in one of the games he was out, we beat the number 6 team in the country by 20. And we had a great game. And what we said before the game was, no one came to Paul VI to be Jordan Smith's support player. Jordan Smith is amazing. Jordan Smith didn't come to be Deshaun Harris Smith, who was a senior, to be his support player, or Darren Harris, who was a junior at the time. He didn't do that. He came to play with other great players and to find his own way and to contribute. And then we talk about culture all the time. And one of the things that we always have to protect ourselves against is people not coming here to PVI to use our culture for their betterment, for their exposure, for their opportunities to show out. We want you to contribute to our culture. And when you have that mindset, then it's amazing how much everyone gets to eat. But it's counterintuitive, right? It's not about you, but it can become about you because of what you do and how you act. And getting a 14 to 18 year old to understand that. And sometimes, as importantly, the family. When that's so important that the family gets it, that's one thing that with our program, it's really important, I'd say to anyone in the coaching world, is to build those relationships with the families, make sure they understand. A college coach one time told me, like, love coming to our games because I can't tell which player belongs to which parent because they're cheering for everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And then Jeremy Roach, one of my favorite stories about that, Jeremy Roach, who was an All-American point guard for us, went on to Duke. Mm-hmm. Jeremy blew out his ACL his junior year. And the very next game, his father, Joe Roach, was at the game with his iPad filming the game for all the other families. And just being there, say, hey, I'm here to support everybody else. See, my son can't play, but I can be here for everyone else. And so that kind of mentality, we hear a lot of the negative stuff that goes on in the game of basketball nowadays, and it's all about me. There's some really outstanding human beings still involved, and some great parents and great families and great kids that want to do things the right way.
Yeah, I love that, man. Because Paul VI isn't for everybody. That's what's great about that. But when you know your program's not for everybody, that's actually when you've got something.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been some people that we just, you know, we are telling everybody. And you know what's great too is our players will tell me, hey, what do you think of Coach, man? He can really play, but no, he doesn't.
Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.